It's time for Cofield and Company. Live at the Golden Circle Sportsbook and Bar, inside Treasure Island, it's Cofield and Company.
I miss the fun. Yeah. Party. Friday, Treasure Island, Golden Circle Sportsbook and Bar is the site. Greg Salerno alongside, doing yeoman's work this week, whatever that means. Funny stuff. I'm going to make sure the sportsbook here does not put a Yankee game in front of us, because that was, dude, you got to chill. Watching that back yesterday, if you go out to ESPN Las Vegas on Twitter, you can see a video of Salerno starts in on the Yankees. I give him like a 5-second break, and then he follows it up by then shaking in his seat. Like, what in God's name is wrong with you?
Yeah, I snapped. I'm telling you, man, it's just, you know, year after year, people think Yankees fans are spoiled. We haven't won a World Series in, you know, 15 years. And
I mean, that sounds a little bit spoiled, but I get your point.
Yeah, well, I mean, because they're always, you know, oh, the Yankees spend this much money, this and that, and whatever.
Evil empire.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, it ain't working.
Exactly.
And they ain't evil enough. That's
no.
My take.
Get more evil.
Yes. So. Again, I'll remind everyone, highly recommend the 90s Bronx Zoo that's on Peacock.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was a reminder, because you were, what, like 12 to probably like 15 years old,
93? I was 13. Yeah, I was 13.
Right? 13. Yeah. So there were some pretty bleak years. Like, they really sucked.
Yeah.
From 90 to 93. And finally in 93, they came out of it, and I think they won 86 games. And then 94 with a team that, when you look back at it, actually wasn't that great.
No.
They came out of the gates 70 and 43. That was before baseball got shut down by scumbag owners who – wanted to break the union, and we never got to see potentially a series between the Yankees and the best team in baseball in 94 was, and I will argue, I'll give you a hint, I will argue that that broke the organization, and then they moved a few years later.
It was the Expos?
Yep, Expos were awesome.
The Pedro Expos?
Yep.
Wow, yeah. That's kind of annoying, too, because then he went up on the Red Sox, and that makes me even more mad. Changed my whole life.
Pedro in Boston was a living hell.
Yeah.
And then late in his career, pardon me, there were rumors that he could actually come to the Yankees, and I was like, I was serious too. Sorry, I got a frog. I'm like, I'm not rooting for him during these years if he comes over. Like, I could tolerate Roger Clemens, but.
Yeah. Now, after he beat up Zimmer, I was like, nah, I don't like you.
What was your take at the time?
He just threw the old man on the ground. I was like, what are you doing, man? You can't just hold his head and let him swing with his little arms or something?
I mean, he could have been a little more restrained.
Yeah.
But.
I mean, he was charging at him. I mean, get it. But.
Zim did want to fight. I mean, I wouldn't dump an old guy. But
I couldn't do that. It's like if somebody, you know, a little kid runs up and kicks you in the shin, I'm not going to, like, punt him.
When Zim came back, or actually when Zim did a press conference and he was like, I'm embarrassed for the Yankees. We played that bite so many times. We were mean.
Now, if I was a Red Sox fan, I would have laughed. Don't get me wrong, but yeah. I'm biased, so, you know.
I will tell you later in the show, probably in the grab bag, we'll get to it. You have a story about horses.
Yeah.
And I'm going to bring up something that we did. I think it was 2006. It was probably the meanest thing we've ever done on sports talk radio for us.
Yeah.
So I'll just leave it at that.
All right. Now I'm intrigued.
It was pretty magical. So we're getting ready for another day and weekend of craziness. We've got NHL draft. Like, basically, we can walk from here. I'm not saying, you know, don't park here. They got the sign up. If you're not staying here, hanging out with us.
That's right.
Don't think you're going to park here and walk over to the Sphere. That's not an idea you want to take advantage of. So we got the NHL draft right around the corner from us, literally around the corner. We've got Copa America with Brazil playing. Should be a much bigger crowd than the game the other night with Ecuador and Jamaica. Today we'll review what happened with the Aces taking on your favorite lady in the WNBA, Angel Reese.
I like how I became the Angel Reese hater all of a sudden.
You do bang on her the most.
I don't bang on her. I just, don't talk so much unless you're going to win more games. That's all I'm saying. That's all. I didn't say, like, oh, I don't like her. I mean, I don't even know her.
I get it. So we got to clean something up from yesterday. And I was like 98% I was right, but I didn't have a chance to look it up. And I'm like, am I misremembering the name of this sport? But you were also right. I talked about, we had discussed our favorite or what the Olympic sports are most looking forward to.
Oh,
we
yeah.
We kind of share a brain on men's basketball, women's basketball as well. I chose women's basketball. I chose women's beach volleyball.
Oh, well, I think every man chooses women's beach volleyball.
Which is dynamite.
Yes.
And then I brought up handball. And then you went like, hey, over there.
Yeah. The handball I remember.
Come over here.
Was a bunch of Italian guys.
Handball.
Yeah. It was a bunch of Italian guys in like gray hoodies with their sleeves cut off that would play with their hands with a racquetball against the wall. I guess it's called wall ball too.
Yeah.
But it was American handball, whatever. Yeah. And then they would jump in their IROC and peel out and drive off afterwards. So that's what I remember my dad doing with his friends when I was a kid. And, you know, so when I thought handball, but then I looked up your handball, and you're right.
Yeah.
It is kind of like lacrosse, but like running around with it or something. It's weird.
It's like a mid-sized ball, like maybe a little smaller than a volleyball, and they just whip it around. I don't know what the rules are in terms of can you run the entire length of the court, field, whatever it is.
Yeah.
I don't know. But when I watch it, I'm like, yeah, it's kind of cool.
I haven't seen it yet, like in action, but I'm looking forward to watching it now that you said that.
So we cleaned it up. We screwed that up yesterday,
yeah.
Or we had a little miscommunication, confusion, but they're both kind of handball and – but I do appreciate your knowledge of the old one. Like, basically, guys coming up, you'd have, like, the, I don't know, what would it be, like a Sergio Tacchini,
you know,
sweatsuit on, you zip off the top. Maybe you got you got the I would call it a, some kind of tee, but I got banned from calling it that about 15 years ago.
Oh, I see,
You can't call it that, even though we're both of Italian blood.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you don't want to talk about it being a beater, but that would be, like,
the tank top you see when a guy opens the door and cops a lot? That tank top.
That.
Yeah.
So we had a change overnight with UFC 303. It's International Fight Week, so all over town, and especially over at the convention center, displays, engagements, fighter interviews, fighter meet and greets. There's some live shows going on over there. Our buddy Ryan McKinnell, Company Forever, he was doing his show over there. They had this card has been, I don't know if you followed this, but the card has been a disaster at the top because of injuries.
Yeah.
So McGregor was supposed to head it up. This is supposed to be a massive card for Las Vegas.
They had the toe.
He has got a broken pinky toe.
You can't do fight with that. I know people were saying you're a wuss or whatever. There's no way.
Well, it's other fighters who are trying to talk trash and bust his chops.
But that's what separates humans from other animals is that we have toes. Like, there's no, you can't fight without a toe. It's not even possible.
So the main event went down, and then the co-main went down because there was something with that. Then they're getting ready to – so they got a new main event with Prochazka and Pereira, right, at 205. And then they book a new fight. They're going to get Brian Ortega to fight. He's got an opponent. Then that opponent has to drop out. And now they've got this this new guy in there. But then Ortega was working to go to lightweight, right? He's a 145er.
Right.
So in between fights, he's starting to bulk up and, like, he couldn't make weight. So last night in the middle of the morning – and it's nothing to be embarrassed about because both were on late notice. Like,
sure.
You know, you can't – the guy might have been walking around 175 pounds 8 days ago when they told him, hey, you're going to fight at 145. So in the middle of the night, you know, they talked it out, and now the fight's going to be at lightweight, which I think might be an advantage for Ortega. I don't know if he's truly the bigger guy. Lopez, apparently when they called him, was actually at 146.5.
Yeah.
Which was, you know, like 6 hours before weigh-in. So I just wanted to give you that note. And the other thing that came out yesterday was a website had caught up with Dana White, and they asked him about Conor McGregor with the toe and simply asked him, hey, can he return by August, September, or October?
Right.
And Dana said, none of the above. So no McGregor for a while.
McKinnell had a funny tweet. There was a video of, I don't know how to pronounce his last name. Is it Prochazka?
Yeah, that was the guy, the Prochazka.
Prochazka.
Okay. I might be getting it wrong, but it sounds a little better.
All right, that sounds better than what I said. Yeah. Anyways, he was talking. I've never seen a guy accused of an opponent of having, like, voodoo or whatever he said, like some kind of, like, mysterious force around him when you're going to fight.
We're going to address that at 3:30. That's our Cofield's quibble query, because Dana White, head of the UFC, also addressed that one.
Yeah.
Because both guys are a little
cuckoo?
Yeah, a little bit. But, you know, you're cuckoo.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Right? With your multiverse yesterday.
Yeah, yeah.
So maybe that's part of the alternate multiverse of another fight. We'll get to the Aces in a couple minutes, but up next we're going to go in the Wayback Machine, not that far back, but about 15 years, actually about 20 years now. Talk to one of our buddies who did ESPN Las Vegas a while back. Coming up later this hour, we're going to check in with Wheeler Ramirez from the AP, Man About Town. What is he covering today? Well, we're going to find out.
Now back to Cofield and Company, live at the Golden Circle Sportsbook and Bar inside Treasure Island.
Rolling on a Friday, it's Cofield and Company. Greg Salerno is in as the company. You know, we've been talking all week, and we'll talk about it into next week as well. You know, we got rough news up on Twitter about our buddy Dave Koken, who's been battling cancer for about a year. And, you know, he sent out a message and saying, you know, it's not going well right now. He got a lot of well wishes. The outpouring has been tremendous. And we wanted to bring people on who, you know, love Koken, worked with him, know what a unique dude he is, what a good radio guy he is, what he's like in the gambling world, what he's like away from all of that. And John Hansen is one of those guys. John was the program director in the early 2000s. John did a show, afternoon drive show, in this slot with DC, and we tracked John down, and parts unknown. All right, John, I don't even know where you are right now. What's going on, buddy?
Hey, man. Thank you so much for having me on. And really, it's a really huge honor. There's so many people. You mentioned the outpouring of support for Dave, and we all love him. And it's a really honor to be able to speak about him.
Well, before we get into Dave, I'm sure there are some listeners who are like, hey, that's right, John Hansen. Where are you now, and what are you doing? I know you had a long stay in Minneapolis. You did a lot of TV. I know you were the PD at, 61 Sports in KC. So how's everything going?
Everything's going good, man. Yeah, Kansas City was a lot of fun. I was in Minneapolis, and so still hanging out in the Midwest and out of the business, though, Steve. So maybe I'm a little out of practice.
Do you miss it?
Of course, okay. Yeah, it's a lot of fun, but it's great to have great friends all across the industry too to keep up with. So, and old Mitch Moss, I think we text quite a bit too.
Yeah. All right, well, you know, let's set this up with the relationship and the show with Koken by telling people, when did you first get to Vegas, and what was your hookup to get in with ESPN Las Vegas?
Yeah, I think I got there in 1999, and I think by the end of 2000, I was there at Lotus. And for me, it was just long story short, but it was, you know, just kind of knocking on the door. And I had been over at another radio station doing a show with my friend Joe Hawk. And at one point, the opportunity just kind of presented itself to end up at ESPN Radio 920 at the time. And I think I was just trying to be a host, but ended up being in the PD spot. So that was quite a surprise to me. And probably a little bit early for me to be doing that, but I jumped at the opportunity, obviously, and was able to join that team.
And then when do you first meet Dave? Like, how aware were you of Dave Koken?
Yeah, I was thinking about that. I may have run into him a time or two prior to joining the station, but, you know, my first opportunity to get to know him was working there at the station, and it was pretty intimidating for me because we had such a good veteran crew at that time, and I was very young. You know, inexperienced, thought I knew what I was doing, so it was a challenge to try to get the support from people who have been doing it a lot longer than me. But, you know, as I think about Dave, I think about, you know, just how supportive he was of me and everything that we were trying to do. You know, some of the things that we tried to do were maybe a little bit different than what the station had done before or traditionally in the market. And he was a guy that back then that embraced it. I don't know if he was always comfortable with it. We asked him to do stuff maybe he wasn't used to, but I know he was always about what's best for the station. He always wanted us to be the best we could be. I know you can attest to that. And that's what I think about with Dave, is what a great team player he was and what a support he was to me when really I had no leg to stand on as far as, you know, I was completely pretty much unproven, but he was still very, very supportive.
John, can you describe a little bit about radio back then versus now, like especially in Las Vegas? Because I hear all these stories. I've already been doing this for about 8 years now, but going back 20, 25 years, people always tell me all these crazy stories about what it's like. What were some of the differences? Was it fiery, more fiery off air than it is now? Because now it's kind of benign.
No, I mean, no, it's like back then, that all we talked about back then would have been the Lions. It's kind of funny. It's come full circle, I think, a little bit, right? Because back then, all we talked about were the Lions. And then I think when I came in, you know, I was coming from markets where personality of the hosts was so much a factor in success or lack thereof.
Sure.
So we tried to probably bring a little bit more of that to the radio station in addition to just kind of the basic fact. And now here we see in this era how the Lines have become so prominent, and everybody really calls it kind of the sports radio of the future. And not even the future, in many ways it's the present right now.
John Hansen is with us, a longtime host and program director at ESPN Las Vegas. We've been talking all week about Dave Koken, who he's still with us. You know, we wanted to have conversations about Dave while he could hear all this, see all this, enjoy it. And, you know, I have a bunch more people lined up next week who love Dave. It's funny when Greg said about we're benign now, our group has actually, and this speaks to Lotus Broadcasting and its loyalty, our group has gotten old. Like, it's not
a good
thing. Like,
that's a good point.
Like, in a way, I guess a good word would be we've matured. Like, we're not the lunatics that we were 15 years ago. But I want to go back to what you said about Dave, because you're right. When you came in and then I followed, there's a brand of sports talk radio that maybe Dave hadn't done, and you got him going on it. And it's funny, the more you do radio with Dave Koken, you realize that he's got all of that to offer. Like, he's actually a little bit crazier than all of us in terms of life experience. So that was always a joy for me. I'd be like, what? Wait, hold on. And, you know, you start to dig, and then he would get into it more. That's, to me, why I know people know him across the country as a gambling dude. Like, I think he's a really good radio guy. He's certainly an all-time Las Vegas radio guy. But how did you find it as the show grew? Were there some times where you're like, what, Dave, really?
Yeah. Just what you're opening up right there, what's going through my mind as you're talking is going, man, we don't have enough time for all the different layers that he has and all the different ways that he was talented on the air. What a great personality. I mean, we all love him, right? Like, so we know him, and we're lucky enough to say we know Dave personally, and we love all those aspects about him. And, yeah, he had an interesting life. It was always – we were always amazed that he would be talking about how late he was up. Yes. The night before, but then he's performing at a high level, right? And but I think about, for the different facets of him, yeah, we had him try some stuff. I'm thinking about, like, but he was always able to do, he could do whatever he wanted him to do, is what I'm saying. Like he was always able to be really, really professional. I'm thinking of, like, I think of a time where we once tried to fool him. We tried to trick him. We told the audience in the commercial break that the next segment was going to be an April Fool's joke. And he was out of the studio, so he wouldn't have heard that. And it was the day of the national championship game in college basketball. And I think Bobby Knight had moved on from Indiana, but I believe Indiana was in the national championship game or the Final Four. We were bringing on an analyst to analyze the game from the Final Four, and the guy, all he would talk about was how great of a job Bobby Knight did. And Dave was like, you could see in his face, he was puzzled.
Yeah.
But he didn't want to embarrass anybody. He wasn't quite sure what's going on. For that reason, I don't think we fooled him. But at the same time, he was, like, trying to keep it professional and not embarrass anybody and not say anything like, you know, you're full of it or anything like that. So it was just kind of an example of the way he was. But I think that, again, just kind of talking about how Dave is as a person is a great teammate. That really comes to mind for me. And you can attest to this, Steve. I mean, like, I've always said, you know, in my days, it's like, man, if you got a problem with drugs, we'll help you. Problem with booze, we'll help you. But if you're a bad teammate, man, like, we don't need you around. And Dave was the best teammate because he would be not only supportive of any ideas, he would provide a lot of ideas, and he was a huge help, mentor, as we've heard a lot about, I know this week especially, to everybody. And I'm talking about the interns that would come through. There was nobody kinder to those interns than Dave Koken. He was absolutely fantastic, so... Yeah, I mean, he was oftentimes the, as I look back on it, you talk about how the staff has matured. We had a lot of immature folks on that staff back then, and Dave was kind of the adult in the room.
Yes, he was. He's also, the reason he's a good sports talk host, and we're talking to John Hansen to work with Dave Koken, and, you know, Dave's still around, he's fighting the fight. Dave is a natural yakker, but he's also naturally combative and does not give an F. Like, if you say something he disagrees with, and as, you know, as a young radio person, you know, maybe he had sort of a nice relationship at times or with other people, Dave does not care. Dave will put you in a position where you're like, you're in the corner and you're like, I got to swing out of here or he's going to knock me out. I'm going to look like a clown.
Oh, I did. I looked like a clown many times. I mean, and, you know, especially like, okay, I'm going, why was I even on the radio talking about boxing? Same conversation with Dave Koken. When I moved to Las Vegas, I knew nothing about boxing. And, of course, you have to know something about boxing if you're going to be on the air there. And trust me, I learned a lot from the likes of Dave Koken and Kevin Ioli and Al Bernstein. And so by the time I, you know, had a few years in, yeah, I knew some things. But to be in a conversation with him, especially a debate with him, what was I doing? I should have just shut off the microphone and left the room.
It's so awesome.
Sometimes he talked enough where I probably could have done that. Yeah.
Right. Well, that's a good point too. Yeah. He could carry you if he needed to. And you know, the other thing for everyone who's worked with him, and especially in that era from like 2000 to 2012 or so, if you didn't have credibility around town, being out and doing a remote, you saw around Las Vegas, people were like, oh, they know this guy. Okay.
Yep. Yeah, being out and about, and certainly when it came to getting guests on the phone, getting guests to come to events, again, just like, I just look at myself, I'm like, why did I even do anything? I should have just, and I think in a lot of occasions, I just did say, hey, Dave Koken's part of this.
Right.
And people said, yeah, we'll sign up, I mean, he had just had such great connections. And the reason why he had connections, as you know, because this guy did it right? As a radio host, he did everything right. He was able to, as a radio host, critique folks, criticize it when needed. Probably more critique is probably the better word, because he never did it disrespectfully.
Right.
People always like coming on with Dave. So it was easy to get guests. And honestly, listening to Dave talk, like when you would talk about boxing, or of course he could talk about many, many other subjects with incredible knowledge. And to listen to some of the people that we were able to bring on and just Dave talking to them, they came on too because Dave would talk on the level of them, and they were professionals in their field. And it was pretty impressive. So, yeah, I was very lucky to be standing by that.
Well, we'll close on this, John. I appreciate you coming on because I know these are not easy things to talk about. And, when you think about it, and you're a pretty humble guy, the tree that you kind of created there with broadcasters and producers and board ops, a lot of people are still at the station. A lot of people have moved on to bigger and better things. So, you know what? You did a hell of a job. And I'll also thank you because I came in as a brokerage show. I don't think you knew who the hell I was in 2004.
Yep.
And you guys treated me like I was part of the station. I would come to the meetings. It wasn't like, what is he doing here? And I don't know if you saw Tony Bonici and Jesse Leeds went into the Southern Nevada Sports Hall of Fame for what they did with the LV Sports Network. And I told Tony, I was like, hey, the thing I really appreciate the most was that you gave us freedom to do what we did. Sometimes we'd cross the line. You didn't flip out. You didn't try to fire us. And you know what? Early on, John, you were part of that as well. So thank you.
Yeah, I appreciate that. And again, it just kind of brings me back to Dave. I'm going, when I started, some of my ideas were really, really crazy. And Dave was on my side from day one, even when I didn't deserve it. So I really appreciated that about him. And I'm telling Dave to keep the fight going, man. We absolutely love this guy, an absolute legend. And it is truly a great, great honor to be able to speak about Dave. And I love you, Dave.
John, thank you so much. Glad you're doing well. I'll talk to you soon, okay?
Thanks, guys.
Take care.
There he is, John Hansen. I haven't talked to John in like 12 years.
It's amazing.
That was good.
Yeah, it was good.
That was really good.
Sounds like the Bill Walsh coaching tree a little bit there.
It was a crazy station group.
Yeah.
In the early 2000s. And like I said, I got there in 2004. And there were some, we'll say, some hyped up shows.
Yeah.
Some rivalries. That whole thing about, Dave going at people. That's why he was great. He didn't freaking hold back. And there were some ideas thrown out by some other hosts, certainly including me, where he's like, what? You'd be like, oh, okay, here we go. It's time to battle. You can go on Twitter, go on Facebook. I'm sure Dave would love to see any messages you guys have for him. It's been unbelievable this entire week. We'll come back about 10 minutes from now. We're going to talk to Willie G. Ramirez, who is hanging out over at the Sphere around the NHL draft.
Hanging at the Golden Circle Sportsbook and Bar inside Treasure Island, it's Cofield and Company.
I took the entire night to process this whole multiverse thing you brought up yesterday. I still don't get it. but I'm going to move on to something. I'm not even going to say it's along those lines. It's just strange. Are you a witchcraft person?
Absolutely not.
Okay. So part of the setup for this main event at UFC 303 with Prohaska and Pajeda is this claim that there's witchcraft being used to prep for the fight. I don't know what the hell is happening here. I do know that Dana White was talking to a media outlet yesterday and was getting all hyped and dropping his F-bombs and was just so excited for the lead into the main event.
When Yuri found out about the fight, apparently he goes into a shed for 3 days. No water, no food, no nothing, and prays or meditates. So he is that dude. So he sees him doing this Sharman stuff and whatever, or Sharma, or I don't know what it is, but he's like, yeah, no, he's using, this is unfair. He's using witchcraft or whatever, black magic. And it is just another reason that this fight is so f***ing awesome.
It's funny. I've never heard anybody say that before, but it's funny.
Did you like the front end about going into a shed?
I mean, it's kind of like what Rocky did in Rocky IV, where he's going to fight Drago, and he like hangs out in that cabin for a month or whatever.
Goes to the top of the mountain.
Yeah, yeah, he runs up the mountain.
And I need an echo in here. I just scared the hell out of these people.
I know. This is a guy doing a job interview like 10 feet.
Spilled his drink all over the managers. Don't get me started, man. Don't get me started.
Yeah.
The montage, and then he starts the run, and those damn Russians and their Mercedes.
Yeah.
They got the chains on the tires, and finally he loses them.
Well, they keep cutting back to
and they go alternate with the cheating.
Yeah, exactly. He's like punching that machine that they have at the bar.
And then
where it shows you how many PSI
you're getting. Brigitte Nielsen's like, ooh, getting all worked up.
Yeah.
I know, that was a little graphic. I wanted to make a lewd comment. I was just like,
I could do without seeing that again.
God, she was smoking back in the day.
Oh, yeah.
And she looked just like him.
Yeah.
He's like, he's 6'6".
I think she
was. Are we talking about this? This is what the Russians really did. He was 6'6", she's 6 foot, and then I'm assuming Kirilenko was actually the love child of those two from that movie.
Probably. Yeah.
Remember Andre Kirilenko was 6'9" and kind of weird himself. Kirilenko played with what? The Jazz, the Nets.
Uh-huh.
I think his wife yearly for their anniversary actually gave him a fun pass to go do whatever he wanted with another woman for that year.
Are you down with that?
I'm not down with it, but I think it's a cool concept. If the wife actually But here's the thing. Is she allowed to do it?
That's my point.
Yeah.
I mean, because I couldn't handle
it. It's only
that.
The male side.
Yeah, that's what I mean. I couldn't handle that, man. There's no way.
You're too jealous.
I don't have that. Well, I don't really get in this serious.
Like, how was it?
Yeah.
And then she looks down at the area I was grabbing.
And she's right. Like, and she's like, well, it's better than that.
She doesn't have to do that. She just kind of gives the look like.
Right, yeah. Oh, man, I couldn't handle that.
Can't wait to do another one of those fun passes,
now,
hubby.
If it's like a. Not a serious thing, then yeah, fine. But I mean, if I'm like with somebody every day and I care about them a lot, oh man, I wouldn't be able to sleep for a week.
I would, if I could walk fast, I would walk over to the Sphere right now, but we don't have to because we got a man over there who's covering the NHL draft. He's been around town covering it. He's on UFC. He's watching the Aces. WGRamirez.com is where you find Willie's stuff. He's up in less than five on Cofield and Company.
Live from the Golden Circle Sportsbook and Bar inside Treasure Island, Willie Ramirez joins Cofield and Company now.
Went to spit, a little humid out, I guess, and mouth getting a little bit dry. Didn't quite clear his arm and just landed right on the shoulder.
Hot tour. Yeah.
That's a heck of a play, and Bryce is hurt. Oh, man, oh, man, oh, man. They lost Kyle Schwarber a couple innings ago, and now Bryce Harper looks like he's hurt.
Oh, what a nightmare for the Phillies. Down Realmuto, Schwarber, down Harper, and Schwarby are now on the 10-day disabled list. I saw Robbie Thompson, the manager, say on the light side with the injuries, 10 to 14 days. But I got to tell you, with a hammy, I know from watching enough baseball that sometimes 2 weeks turns into 4 weeks. So this will be a real challenge for the Phillies, and he's one of our hometown heroes in Bryce Harper. Willie is a hometown hero. He's covering the NHL draft as they're going to be drafting hometown heroes for all these hockey organizations around North America. What's up, William?
Did you just bring me back with a rejoin that included a little hot tour?
And the Braves announcers, thanks to the Braves Radio Network and Phillies Radio Network, but yeah, the Braves announcers, I guess the guy spat upon himself, and they were like, he just delivered a little hot tour.
Very strong. The memes on the hot tours are very strong.
They are strong. They are. I don't know how much of the Sphere setup you've had a chance to see, but Mr. Scoop, Chris Matthews, tweeted out earlier and seemed like he was underwhelmed. Have you gotten a look?
Well, it's funny you bring him up because the first time I was in here, I was actually in a suite with Chris Matthews watching you two. I think everybody, if they're in here for the first time, longtime reporter Steve Karp just tweeted out, this is amazing. So I think a lot of people are a little, you know, overwhelmed by it and sort of fascinated. A lot of us are intrigued to see what they're going to do after each draft pick, like if they're going to use the LED boards to do their highlights all the way across or if they'll use multiple ones. I certainly am. So, yeah, but I think it's kind of cool that this is the first sports-related event when we all know who wanted to have the first sports-related event. This is a live event, so it's the first live event. It's just not the first competitive event.
So let's circle back before we get to some of the nitty-gritty and what you've been doing around town with the NHL draft. Aces are out of town. They were in Chicago. Angel Reese is a gigantic favorite of Greg Salerno. He loves her game. He actually doesn't. He bags on her. You know I love her.
I
love her. We're making you the bad guy in this one.
I know.
Let's talk about that win because this is an easier part of the schedule. It's important to build some confidence, more games under the belt for Chelsea Gray. So what did you see in this one? Because Asia Wilson went off.
Yeah, I think why it was important is that they shook off that little bit of a lull that they were in with Chelsea Gray coming back at home and did it against Seattle and Connecticut. So the big question is, regardless of the opponent, could they go on the road and sort of match that intensity? And I think the Commissioner's Cup break gave everybody a nice breather. And I thought that they were challenged here and there, but they controlled for most of it. I thought the matchup with her and Angel Reese was good. I still think Angel Reese at this point right now, she may not be the favorite at the sports books, but I do think that she is the front runner for Rookie of the Year to this point. But I think it was a good. I think realistically, any win is a good win in the WNBA right now. Like last night, Washington took Connecticut to overtime. Nobody would have thought that. This is a 10-point dog, right? But they took them to overtime. Everybody's sort of coming up. They've gotten past their rough spot. So just because it was Chicago and they're lower tier, that's a team that could very well challenge for the number 8 spot. So it was a good win for the Aces.
Willie, I saw you tweet something out I had to ask you about. I am just now a new member of Netflix because I've been staying in a hotel. And yeah. I saw this thing, Dancing with the Devil. Now, mentioned that there's some dancers from in town that were maybe part of this or are people that you knew from Inglewood or something. Explain this to me a little bit.
Okay, so the TikTok dancing craze that's gone on for years now, right? That's pretty much, we saw it when Instagram created Reels, it was because of TikTok. And so you have these dancers that they either went on to Dancing with the Stars or World of Dance, all these dancing competitions, and they branched off with TikTok, and they would do these little 1-2-minute routines, and the followers just blew up. They went from, 10,000 followers to 50,000 to 100,000 to millions of followers, and they would just do these short little routines, and people love them, and they do it to the up and cut. And then all of a sudden, you get these dance challenges, the specific songs, and that's how the dance challenges blew up. Well, one guy, Aubrey Fisher, who was sort of the main, one of the first guys, he was one of the one. His crew was one of the ones that was with the Dr. Dre and Snoop halftime show. The dancers that were in the bottom of the little house or the boombox that they had built up in one of the little rooms, they were doing the dances. So there's I don't know if he's a pastor or what if he's an ordained minister, but they're calling it a cult where they draw them into the church and they all live in this compound. And he saw money on the table to bring these dancers in and manage them and tell them, hey, you can film all your stuff at our compound, this huge different scenes in this beautiful scenery and different parts of the house and sort of took care of them. And gave them a house to stay, like an incredible layout for a very cheap rent. But the deal was they had to cut him in on the profits. But then he had the management fee, he had rent, and he had the videography. But everybody was within his family. So it's a 3-part documentary that was just absolutely fascinating. Because for me, it was just because everybody's in there is like who I've been sitting there and watching. Because you know how it is with algorithms, you hit like. For you, it's probably right. If you like different comedians, you follow comedians, so all these comedians are going to pop up,
sure.
Right? So for me, I would get that because some 30 years ago in old school Vegas, I was part of the old school nightclub DJ and dancing scene. So that, to me, it was appealing because I used to tell a lot of the guys from back in the day, I'd be like, can you imagine if we had social media back then? That would be us doing these routines out in the middle of Las Vegas Boulevard or somewhere and putting these things on TikTok. But it's wild and fascinating to see what they got entrenched. There's a couple, a married couple. Apparently, they're still in there, and they've been dislodged from the girl's family.
Yes. And the sister, because they were a big hit on social media. Is it Melanie Derrick? I forget the sister's name. Actually, the sister just married...
Wilking. Melanie Wilking. Derrick Melanie is the married Wilking. Name of the sister, Miranda Derrick. But yes, go ahead. Tell her who they're married to, who she's married to.
The sister is married to Austin Eckler.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. And actually, we'll see what develops in this Kyle Filipowski story,
yeah,
where they're saying he's been groomed and separated from his family.
Sure.
There's a lot of similarities in this one. And when you talk about a preacher, he's – I don't know if he's a preacher. He's a scam artist,
yeah,
and he's been staying above the law for a while here. Willie Ramirez is with us. All right, Willie, let's talk about what's been going on around town. I know you went to a couple of functions where the NHL went out to local scenes and was working with kids. So what'd you cover?
Yeah, so yesterday it was kind of cool yesterday. The first one, actually Wednesday, was at City National Arena. The prospects, the top prospects that are going to be drafted, probably in the first round, about a handful of them, 5-6 of them, they skated with some young kids at City National Arena, did a little clinic on ice. Then they came up and met with the media, just the anticipation, getting ready, including Macklin Celebrini, who's we know is going to be the number one pick. And then yesterday went out to the James Boys and Girls Club in historic West Las Vegas, old part of town off Cary Avenue. And, that's where Ryan Reeves donated the ball hockey clinic, and he wanted to bring something to the black community. And so the NHL Player Inclusion Coalition was out there, and Zach Whitecloud announced a $20,000 grant on behalf of Ryan. And it's going to be spread out among 10 different facilities, Southern Nevada Boys and Girls Club, for staff payroll, but also for equipment and ball hockey clinics and whatever it's going to take to sort of infuse around the community hockey. So it was kind of cool. PK Subban was out there with the kids. A lot of other members that are part of the coalition. So it was good. It was good to see, you're coming into the town and you're all over the strip and, you're bringing your logo and stuff. But to get out to the community and be a part of something that Ryan Reeves and the Golden Knights started long ago.
Willie, you make a good point, because I lived in San Diego for a while. I don't know if L.A. is the same as far as this goes. A lot of indoor gyms, a lot of places for kids to go, a lot of rec centers. Why doesn't Vegas have more? I feel like we should have more, especially because it's the weather and stuff here.
Well, I think that they do, Greg. I just think that what's happened is what's taken place is as sports is growing in this town, realistically, and since pro sports has arrived, we're also entrenched and enamored by everything that's going on the strip. As we opened up this segment, talking about, so many things going on, NHL draft, power slap, UFC, there's all these things taking place.
Right.
But yeah, locals outside that don't live anywhere near the strip, there are plenty of community centers, whether it's Clark County facilities or the city of Las Vegas Parks and Recreation. There are definitely, facilities out there. We don't hear about them because the media is not going to cover them because what are we doing? We're out here at the NHL draft, right? So that's why it's kind of funny you ask that, and I've hinted to Steve, but I'm going to have a big announcement in another couple of weeks here that's going to take me back to the community reporting days that I can't really touch on yet. But I got something special coming, and we're going to have a lot of community outreach, a lot of community stories that's going to go beyond the pro athletes that are in this town, but more so on the local. Be it UNLV men and women or high school boys and girls or youth sports stars. So there's plenty out there. It's just a matter of getting the coverage.
Willie, we got a little over a minute left.
Yeah.
We have Power Slap 8 tonight, again, right down the road from where you are and I am and Greg is at Fountain Blue. Is Power Slap 8 is happening. The you love these guys. You love these guys. The crazy Hawaiian joined us yesterday. We got a video up
that?
At Steve Cofield. He's fun, man. He's
yeah.
Big guy. I mean, gentle giant. I know you've talked to him a lot. I know you have a story about his family right now at WGRamirez.com. So what's that all about?
Just, I had talked to him and Dana White a while back, about 6 months ago, and it was more or less about the Polynesians and their culture and how they've been a part of the slap fighting long before Dana White bought and created Power Slap. And they talked to a couple of the Hawaiians before the one that was on Super Bowl weekend, Power Slap 6 at the Durango Station. They talked about how they said, how'd you get started? They said, it's from discipline, because our parents never had a problem with backhanding us or giving us a crack. But we grew up getting used to being slapped. So, you know, it just grew into the, when they saw the slap fighting, they got into it more and more. And this guy, Koa, as you, who you met, Koa Viernes, and his younger brother will be on the card tonight. But the crazy Hawaiian, the first Power Slap one, when I went out there and I covered for AP, I talked to Shane Victorino, and I was like, what draws you here? He goes, man, there's this guy that I've been following. He's called the Crazy Hawaiian. And he pointed, he goes, oh, there he is, there he is. So when I went to introduce myself to, you know, to get some quotes from him, like you said, General Giant, here's this big, overpowering guy with this big, massive head, big beard, and he reaches out, and these soft hands, and he grasped my hand, which disappeared in both his. He goes, hello, brother. How are you? Yes, let's talk. I mean, this soft-spoken guy, and you're waiting, you know, I'm just waiting for a crack to the jaw. But I find it fascinating, and more or less, the energy in the arena on these events from the Paulies is incredible.
Willie, enjoy it. I'm sad that you're not going to Power Slap 8, but we'll look for the coverage all weekend long of everything else that's going on here in Vegas. Have fun tonight.
All right, thanks. Give Greg a slap. Talk to you.
I was actually,
have a good weekend, bro.
You needed a slap yesterday when I posted that video about you going crazy on the Yankees. I'm like, bring the crazy Hawaiian back to freaking slap
it's
you
like
around.
An airplane. They start smacking the lady in the seat.
Yes. 4 o'clock hours on the way. We bring in Reno.